sucks.
Buccaneers fans, the sage of Tampa Bay sports, Ira Kaufman, is back. Steve Hesmitz from JoeBucksFan.com here with Lee DeCamper, and this is the Ira Kaufman podcast. The sage is focused. He's fired up. He's the king of Newport Richey, Mr. Bill Curry Ford himself. Ira, exciting times this weekend at Bill Curry Ford. 90 days, no payments. Don't worry. Drive Curry. They've got incredible offers. Check them all out at BillCurryFord.com. The dealership's a mile north of the stadium on Dan Avery Highway, family owned. GM Sean Sullivan, he is our draft guru, but he's also the big boss at Bill Curry Ford. He'll interact with you personally and take care of you if that's what you need. Reach out to him through BillCurryFord.com. He's got a great team. He'll give you the Ira Kaufman discount, and they've got the biggest service department in the Tampa Bay area. You can get in, you can get out. They will service your vehicle at your home or get you a ride in and get you a loaner vehicle. Incredible at Bill Curry Ford. That includes body work. BillCurryFord.com, a Tampa tradition for almost as long as the sage has been on the planet. And Ira, Florida's Elite Restoration cannot be forgotten, but now we have to remember that Florida's Elite Restoration has expanded. They've got satellite headquarters in Orlando now. They're servicing customers across the state. They do repairs, something that we have not talked about too much, mostly their Elite Restoration services, but they'll also rebuild something for you if that's what you need. So they're a true one-stop shop, Florida's Elite Restoration.com, but still our locally owned family company that we love so much, owner Josh Martin. He'll give you $500 if you call Florida's Elite Restoration in your time of need, 24/7 with a mold problem, fire, flood, water damage. And if you eventually need their services after a free estimate, a free evaluation with the great technology at your home, you will get $500 back to use toward your deductible or just cash back. Florida's Elite Restoration.com. Get there now so you know where to go and feel safe and comfortable and protected when disaster strikes your property. The Ira Kaufman podcast, I got to tell everybody, had a little bit of an audio glitch when it uploaded the other day, but that was only an issue for like 35 minutes. So anybody who had that issue and got mad and threw their phone or screamed, it was corrected very quickly, and thousands of people have enjoyed it. But for anybody who's listening to this thinking the last one was ruined, it was not. Florida's Elite Restoration.com can be heard there. Bill Curry Ford and the Sage. How are you, Ira?
So many people bitch about it. Tells me, that, again, reinforcing that we are the most popular late podcast on the planet. We're not the only one. And there's one reason, and one reason only. Lee, and it's not my charm. It's the fact that we tell it like it is and don't sugarcoat things. Lee, one quick thing about Florida's Elite Restoration. Of course, we're now in hurricane season. We hope it's a very dormant season as opposed to what the experts are predicting. But, Lee, I need you to agree with me that it's very satisfying to see a well-run company flourish. And that's what's going on with Florida's Elite Restoration. This guy, Josh Martin, Lee, I don't know if you've met him, but I have on several occasions. Very, very sharp and always has the consumer at heart. It's just nice to see a good company do well in this economy. So we're going to talk Bucks on this podcast. And I don't care that we're 3 weeks away from training camp. I don't care. We roll on. Steve presents some interesting debate topics. And I'm ready to delve into it.
I can tell Ira's not following the stock market when he refers to in this economy.
Everybody can also follow Florida's Elite Restoration on Instagram, get a little more feel for what they do. All right, Ira, look, we got 4 weeks till training camp. Don't rush it, even though we can't wait. Don't rush it. Don't rush it. Ira, you know, we've talked about this offense in a lot of different ways, but if you had to pick one person outside of Mayfield, what's really your X factor with this offense for this season? What do you feel has to change for the team to get to the next level?
I think it's Liam Cook. I think it's Liam Cook. And Lee and I talked about this a lot, and it was an important topic. Just a total lack of imagination by Dave Canales when it came to the running game. A total lack of imagination. And Lee's right. Running Rashad White between the tackles time and again, time and again. No variation. Whether it's short yardage, first down didn't matter. That lead was another failure. We can remember the times that he got through, Rashad White got through the first wave of defensive players on one hand, all season. He got stopped at the line of scrimmage. 2 yards, 3 yards, time and again. He did okay with the passing game. We remember that Mike Evans said to both of us, Lee, that he was running routes he'd never seen before. Fine. Mayfield had a very good season. You've given him some due for that. But there's got to be more variation in the run game, or please, they're going to take your idea and say, yeah, the hell with it. Let's throw the ball 45 times because we can't run it. I'm not ready to give up on this run game until I see a different approach. We'll see what Cohn can do. The Rams did not have a great offense in 2022 with Liam Cohn. The Ram offense wasn't very good. Now, having said that, Stafford and Cooper Kupp were hurt that year and missed like half the season. And they'll come with an asterisk, to be fair to Cohn. But Lee, I'm very curious to see what Cohn can do with this running game. Rashad White's the same running back he's always been. Can you get more out of him? And if you can't, let's try Bucky Irving. But I want to see Cohn have an impact on this run game.
Like, if Rashad White was a decent runner, I wouldn't care if he called the same play time after time after time. I have to hope the offense coordinator is looking for success or successful plays. Not necessarily plays, but successful plays. And running Rashad White up the middle is a lost cause. And if you got Cohn there, and I'm okay with doing that as long as you have success. And they didn't have success. With Cohn, it's very interesting. I do not know for sure if Cohn called plays for the Rams or not. I've heard some people say, no, that was Sean McVay. There's no doubt that the Rams offense fell off the cliff in 2022. Whether we're to blame it on injuries, most of those guys played 9 or 10 games, and then they lost Stafford and Cooper Kupp, Allen Robinson. Someone got mad at me. Why didn't you mention Allen Robinson? Well, he was a starting receiver. That's why I mentioned. So all those guys got injured about the same time. One leader came back at me and said, well, you know, Stafford was banged up all year. Their offensive line, okay, they were injured real life. All right. So I don't know if it's, I sure kicked the Hornets' desk. But I don't do stories based on Warren Sharp's stats, how bad Cohen's offense was for the Rams. Oh, man, people got mad at me. It was very similar when people got mad at me when I pointed out Will Leffler is a rotten offensive coordinator in Arizona. How dare you say that? Well, I think the Rams were last in total offense that year, 32nd. But here's the silver lining, and Sharp pointed this out as well. When Stafford got hurt and they brought Mayfield in, the offense actually improved. And that was without Cooper Kupp. That was without Allen Robinson. So that's kind of heartening that Cohn was able to recover after losing your darn good quarterback. And that also makes me kind of, I guess, excited to see what he does with Mayfield. Well, if he was able to improve his offense, put Mayfield, you know, dropped out of the sky in what, December, November? That's encouraging. I know you're a run guy, Ira. I just went through some stats the other night that just demonstrates if you want to pound the ball, knock yourself out, but you're not going to win. The evidence is overwhelming. And I do agree with Mike Lombardi. You have to pass to win, but you also have to run to develop a tough offense, because a tough offense is going to get you farther. It's a fine line. Arians found that fine line in 2020 and 2021. I don't know if Cohen's going to find that fine line this year because he just doesn't have a running back.
I just want him to get into the middle of the pack. Dave, you said it many times, you're right. Nobody's asking this to be a top 5 rushing offense. Nobody. They don't have Christian McCaffrey. They don't have a running back like that. Let's see, can they get to 17 or 18 in terms of yards per carry? This running game's killing this offense, Dave. It's killing it.
White's half like Christian McCaffrey. He's so good in the pass game. And that's what's really confusing to me. How he can make guys miss in the pass game. And I know it's underwear football and guys can't hit. I get all that. But he had a move in minicamp that I saw that just blew my mind. He caught a pass in the left flat. And I couldn't tell the linebacker because I was screened heavily by players and coaches standing in front of me. But I saw some linebacker come at him. He put a move on this guy. Holy smokes. And White is so good at that. But yet when he gets the ball in the backfield, he can't make a mailbox miss.
Great point by Lee, Steve. And I think it's got a lot to do with how much room you got around you to make a move. But
as far as being the first guy to exceed after a resection, Blake's off the charts. See, he's off the charts. Yeah. I don't think there's anybody better in this league at doing that on a reception. You know, jammed up in the middle of the field on a run, he hasn't shown that he can make that guy miss, Steve.
Yeah, it's a little different for him when he's in tighter space. I've said this before in different ways. I think Rashad White's overrated as a receiver, absolutely. But he's also a little underrated as a runner. I think a little better blocking and a little better coaching is going to show that this year. So I think he might look more like an average running back this year, a little more.
Well, why is he overrated as a receiver, Steve?
Because people talk about him as if he's 1, 2, 3 in the league, and I don't think that's the case. I just don't see that. He has excellent hands. I'm not questioning that, but I see him more as a top 8 to 10 guy, not a top 2 or 3 guy, or in the elite conversation. As far as that's just what I see.
I don't agree, and I don't think Mayfield would agree either, Steve, on that regard. Look, his main job is to run the ball.
Sage, you loved Charles Sims when he was here. Absolutely loved him and adored him. His numbers in his best year catching the football were better than White's. I've spelled that out, but nobody celebrated him as, man, this guy's the top 3 guy in the league. Some of it's a perception game and big games, and he's good. I'm not saying he's not good, but I just think he may be a little underrated as a runner and a little bit overrated as a receiver. That's all.
All right, well, I just keep looking at 90% completion on balls that are thrown to him. I mean, that is rather remarkable. You could say it's hands, it's this, it's that, but he's also getting into the right place on time. You catch 90% of the balls that are thrown to you, that's off the charts.
Yeah, you're doing something right, certainly.
Yeah, I know some people are going to scream, and I get that it's not the most popular take, but of the running backs who caught a ball per game last year, where do you think Rashad White ranked in yards per reception, Ira?
He can do better in yards per reception. There's no question about it, Steve. There's no question about it. But he did score some touchdowns catching the ball. Where did he rank, Steve? I'm going to say he ranked in the bottom third.
No, he was eighth. Like I said, I just feel he's in that top 6, 7, 8, 9 range for guys out of the backfield. And we'll see. Now, hopefully he can improve. Last year, the team that made the playoffs with the least amount of rushes, the fewest attempts per game by a team that made the playoffs, was Houston. They ran 25 times a game. And so I agree with you, Ira. If you're going to be at the bottom of the charts running 20, 25 times a game, you need to be effective with those runs, and that can make a big difference over time.
I ran across something this morning that I thought was interesting, and I want your feedback, because I know that you talk to Foles a lot, mostly off the record, and that's not the only guy you talk to, but I do know you talk to him often. Greg Cosell. This morning I ran across a video of him, and he was talking about Bryce Young and the Panthers. And he said something that I thought sort of applies to Mayfield. He was saying about Bryce Young, for Bryce Young, because he's a short quarterback, he said most NFL offenses, your offensive tackles are the key players on the offensive line. And he said because of Bryce Young so short, you have to flip that philosophy. It's got to be the interior. Now, we know Baker Mayfield's a short guy. Jason Wright said on your own podcast, Ira, at the Combine, that Todd Bowles told him the middle of last season that they need bigger guys in the interior. They need to go get bigger guys in the offseason. Bowles was saying that to White, middle of the season, White said. Do you think the reason why they didn't get bigger offensive linemen last year is because they weren't yet sold on Mayfield? And let's say by halfway through the season, Bowles like, okay, he's our guy, we're going to keep him. Now we need to get the bigger offensive lineman to help him.
That sounds like a very sensible scenario, Lee. They didn't quite know what they were going to get out of Mayfield. They didn't know if they were going to stick with Mayfield through the season or have to put Trask in to salvage the season. And you're right, as the season went by, and it became clear that Mayfield was going to get the job done in terms of ball security, which is number one priority for Bowles. Lee, number one, he said it a million times. You got to take him at his word. And then, we got to get bigger. Now, Lee, I also think he was talking about a better run game in that regard and pushing guys off the line of scrimmage in the trenches. They're going to have two new starters on the O-line, Lee. I'd be surprised if they don't. And I'm not completely sold on Malcolm, but I think he's coming back.
and I would kick them at right guard. Why switch the guy to left guard late after 1 year? You're gonna mess with the guy. He wasn't bad. Malcolm wasn't bad, wasn't great. Hit the rookie wall, understood. But I think you're making a good point. Once Mayfield was established as the one quarterback, going forward, they got to shore up the interior. It reminds me a little bit about Drew Brees and Ali. You and I are not comparing Mayfield to Drew Brees.
Exactly.
But it's a fair point, Steve.
All right. I mean, look, on the defensive side, Yaya Diaby was on SiriusXM NFL Radio, and he said that he's preparing for 50 snaps a game. And that's, coaches have been talking to him about how much more he's going to be playing this year. And I went back and looked at it, and he never did play 50 snaps a game in any of the games last year. Even when he became the starter, he was still in like a 62, 63% of the snaps, 65% of the snaps mode. And they're looking to jack him up, and obviously they're looking for a tremendous return here. Shaq Barrett, in his heyday with the Bucs, I looked that up as well, he was in the high 70s, like 78-79% of the snaps over the three seasons when he was most effective. Do you think they're going to try to really lean on Diaby to that extent? Do you think he can physically handle it? And what do you think the outcome is going to be?
I don't think anything's set in stone with this guy, Lee, because the first thing I think of is he's no longer a surprise for opposing offenses. So they're going to game plan a little bit against him. And I think he's going to have to make a few adjustments if he wants to take the next step up to double-digit sacks. And I think the guy might be able to do it, Lee. 5-6 more sacks per game. And if they get a little better production, Lee, off the left side, where, let's be honest, Lee, Shaq didn't do much, even though he occupied some blockers. He wasn't productive. Maybe a Braswell, and I just say this to make Steve happy, maybe a Randy Gregory, Lee. He's still on the team, Lee, after training camp, which to me is an open question. The other piece that you're saying, and I'll tell you what, if this guy does get 11 sacks this year, Jason Light's going to look really good, Lee. Really good.
You're right. My first thought was, if Yaya gets 11 sacks, he's going to make some money down the road. That's the first thing I thought. You're right about Mike. I really hope Yaya comes here. I really like the guy. He's a great guy. I mean, he's the marketing director's dream of a smile. I keep telling him he needs to have his agent hook him up with Yaya's flame-broiled chicken. I mean, that's just perfect. Just a great guy, and I really want him to succeed. But I have to be honest, and I have to be fair. As much as I like him, and we'll find out this year what the answer to the question is, but I just found it very interesting that when he became a starter, his production fell off. And I seem to think, and you brought it up, Ira, I seem to think that, you know, there was tape out on him. He had played enough that there was a, you know, body of evidence that offensive coordinators could study and game plan against him. And I don't know if it was that. I don't know if it was the rookie wall. I don't know if it was a combination of the two, which very likely could be. I certainly hope it was the rookie wall. I really do. If Yaya is successful, I think the Bucs defense will be successful.
I think you're right, Lee, because, Steve, I'm confident. I am confident in Vita Vea and Canty. Steve, they got to stay healthy. You know, Vea's been, nicked up over the years a little bit, but he's 29. He should be in his prime. I don't expect a huge drop-off from Vita Vea, and I think Canty's coming on, going to come on strong. Steve, if they get something out of the edges, you know, I'm not talking about Shoyinka. I think that ship sailed. Steve, I do.
Ira,
not spend too much time on Logan Hall.
Ira, where did the ship go? Where did it go?
The ship went aground, Steve. It went aground off the coast of Costa Rica. And, you know, I don't think anybody can do a salvage job. I don't have any confidence in him. And you know what? Lee, neither do the Bucks. Because they put him on notice with the fifth-year option. They're not betting on the guy. If he can get 8 sacks, great.
Only, great is 8 sacks. He might be back. I don't know.
That's right.
I'm guessing, you know, obviously they have an investment in him, a large investment. Do you think they give him 4 to 6 games to show that, hey, the light is finally shining? If he doesn't do anything in those 4 to 6 games, it's Braswell's turn?
I do. I'm not even sure he gets 6. I don't think they've quite given up on Steve, especially Light. You know, I mean, he fell last pick in the first round, but still first round. And hasn't done much to justify that stature. And Calvin Wright's ready to give up on him. I think he wants to take another look at him. But see, he's on a short leash. He's not going to have much time to show that he's a different guy.
I think Wright has given up on him. I think it's Bulls who hasn't given up on him. I mean, Wright does everything he can to replace the guy. In the last two drafts, he's drafted big, athletic edge rushers in Braswell and Diaby. He goes out and signs Randy Gregory. That's a desperation. I want to replace somebody move. They gave decent money to Anthony Nelson, and it seems like they're trying to get rid of him. But Bowles was the one at the owners' meetings in late March talking about how he's a multi-tool weapon, and you know, people don't see what Shaheed is doing out there, and he's one of these tools and chess pieces. And I think it's Bowles clinging to this guy, and I think Bowles clings to his guys in general. You know, I don't even know if Bowles wanted to get rid of Carlton Davis. I don't believe that he did. I think that came from the top. What do you think?
I think you're reading too much into Bowles' quotes. And I'll give you an example. Lee and you were there many times with me when Bowles would, go to the mattresses. He went to the mattresses for Devin Wright. Lee, did he ever nearly knock Devin Wright from the podium?
Yeah,
I
thought
so. If he did, I must have missed it. Lee, I must have missed it. We talked about all the good things that he does and, you know, some of the stuff he said about Shoyink. I mean, it's pretty transparently. He was talking about him defending passes or something. I mean, you know, crazy stuff. He wasn't drafted to defend passes of the flag, Lee. I mean, let's be honest. He was drafted to put quarterbacks on their ass. He hasn't done it. I wouldn't read too much into Bowles trying to, talk up Shoyink. I think it's a message from Shoyink, from Bowles, that you still got a chance. You still got a chance to turn this narrative around. I'm like you, Lee. I just don't have a lot of confidence that he will.
Bucks fans giving me hope. And I know there's some Bucks fans. I don't know why. But I don't want to mention the guy's name. And some Bucks fans spoke to this when I mentioned his name. And I can't figure out why. Why you hate a good player. But here we go. The one thing that's giving me hope is Hassan Reddick. And what I mean by that is he was a first-round pick by Arizona. I believe Arians was still there. He stunk his first 4 years. He was awful. And, or his first 3 years, I'm sorry. They didn't give him a fifth-year option. His fourth year, he blew up. Ever since then, he's had double-digit seasons. Ever since. It took him 3 years to figure it out. And so I'm hoping that somehow or another that Joe Tryon Shoyinka is the next Hassan Reddick. And it clicks for him finally in his fourth season.
So Reddick had a change of scenery, right, Lee?
His third season, he stayed in Arizona. They just washed their hands of him. I guess they weren't impressed or convinced. He goes to Philly, and you know, he's been a double-digit sack guy ever since his fourth season. His fourth season was when he turned it around, which was his last season in Arizona.
Steve, I think by the, you know, sixth week, seventh week, I mean, I think Braswell's got the job. I think, unless we're going to be surprised by somebody stepping up, whether it's the veteran Gregory or Shoyinka. Now, Lee, I would not leave Diaby off the right side. I mean, I'm ready to switch him, you know, the Bucks are famous for switching these guys. I'm leaving Diaby on the right side. He seems like he's comfortable there in the blind side. So I'm looking at somebody on Shaq's, old left side. And I think Braswell's going to claim the job pretty much after 5 or 6 weeks.
I just wanted to say real quick, the Reddick story is unique, and at least there's a tie to the Bucks because he was drafted, and it wasn't his fault. Arians did not play him at outside linebacker. He was an inside linebacker and was begging to play outside, and then Arians left, and then other coaches came in, kept him at inside linebacker. In his fourth season, he finally got to play outside, and that's when he exploded for 12 and a half sacks, and he left Arizona, said, the hell with you. He goes to Carolina, has a good year, and then makes the big bucks.
Good analysis, Steve.
We always know that there is cause and reaction. So Vita Vea dropped a bunch of weight this year, this offseason. And, of course, the Bucks were crowing about that in the offseason. Well, I was listening to a podcast the other night. A guy by the name of Robert Mays works for the Athletic. They were talking about the NFC, him and a guy from the EFF tribe. And they were talking about the NFC. And Robert Mays, he said that when he was watching film of Vita Vea, he thought he lost his burst, or at least he slowed down some. And I thought that was interesting because they didn't say a word. They didn't mention anything about Vita losing weight. And I wonder if Miz caught on to something, that the Bucks saw that too, and they said, hey, Vita, you got to lose weight. And Steve brings this up often. I always overlook it and forget it. But Vita's not a young man anymore. He's pushing 30. He's 29. And right. Nose tackle's not a soft position. You think Miz is onto something and maybe Vita lost his burst or maybe lost a split second of his speed, and that's why the Bucks asked him to drop weight? Because you don't normally hear of nose tackles dropping weight, and that's a good thing.
It's a very interesting development with Vita. I think, Steve, it's fair to say that Miz girth, 340, 350, was part of his effectiveness. At least that's the way people thought, that it was an asset, that a movable force, a guy who was taking on two blockers, still getting 5 sacks a year, very strong against the run. Steve, we don't know what his flyweight's going to be this fall, but he might gain a little bit in burst, but is he going to be as stout at the line of scrimmage? It's very interesting, and if they want him to lose weight, Steve, what took so long? Maybe Lee's got a point. Maybe the tape in 2023 showed that he wasn't getting off the ball like he was before. He wasn't getting into the backfield as much as before. And that's something to really keep an eye on with Vita, because, Steve, up till this point, I thought the 350 was an asset for him.
Yeah, this came up about 6 weeks ago when Bowles was at an OTA practice, and the weight thing came up. Vita had told Rich Eisen, that he was playing at 360. He was 347 at the combine as a smaller guy. And Bowles' famous quote that we talked about was, quote, "We've talked about it for a long time. He's finally taking it to heart, to where he's really making the strides and the changes necessary." Keyword necessary. So maybe Vita finally saw it on film for himself. Maybe he started thinking about money and who's going to pay me when I'm 30. I don't know, but whether it affects him or not, it's unclear. I don't really know if how he's retransitioned his body. Vita was real tight-lipped, didn't want to put a number out there, didn't want to really get into extreme details about this makeover. Yeah, and we'll see if he comes back in the same kind of shape. It wouldn't be uncommon for a guy like Vita to go on vacation and all of a sudden he's got 8 extra pounds on him coming back to training camp.
Maybe this whole thing comes down to, as a veteran that's been through the wars, Lee, as you mentioned, at nose tackle, 50, 60 snaps a week, 17 games, and then the postseason. Lee, maybe at that stage he can't handle 360. Maybe that's the thinking, like he was when he was 25. And he's not 25 anymore. I think it's something to keep a strong lookout, Lee, early in the season. How does it affect the run defense, which has been very solid, as opposed to the pass defense last year in particular? If it helps him get off the ball, fine. But I think you lose a little bit in the translation. We shall see.
By the way, did you find it interesting, Ira, that Steve referred to a guy that's 347 as little?
And he was thinking of me when he said it, too, Lee.
I got your beat by quite a bit, Ira, so.
Hey, Steve, we talked about it on the fringes, Lee, but, boy, the more I look into it, the slow starts.
Yeah.
And my research, I'm not Warren Sharp, who is very sharp, but, I'm good at math. And just look at, Lee, the teams that started slowly, and by that I mean they had trouble scoring in the first quarter, and the Bucks had a lot of trouble scoring in the first quarter. Lee, as you mentioned, no opening drive touchdowns. But the whole quarter, Lee, the 15 minutes, they sunk offensively. Lee, I'm looking at, the bottom 10 teams in points in the first quarter, and, Lee, eight of them out of the 10 finished overall at the bottom in scoring. So, it kind of set the tone, and they couldn't overcome it for the most part. The opposite is true. The teams that scored a lot in the first quarter, it's common sense, Lee, it's common sense. The Dallases, the Chiefs, teams like that get off the quick starts. By the end of the day, Lee, they got 27 or 31 points, and the Bucks don't. I think that's job one for Liam Cohen.
Hey, CJ, one last question for you on the podcast here. And we want to thank Bill Curry Ford, BillCurryFord.com. Get there. Start shopping today. Great offers that will end at the end of June, so you want to take advantage of those. Beautiful shopping weekend. And Florida's Elite Restoration. Follow them on Instagram, Florida's Elite Restoration. And definitely check them out, FloridasEliteRestoration.com. I just did a quick Google search here. I put in slow starts, Jets, Todd Bowles, first quarter offense. And I've got a slew of scores.
You are devilish, Steve. You are devilish.
I got a slew of stories through the years of Bowles being in New York about slow starts of his teams offensively. Can you pin that on the head coach? Is that fair? Is this a Bowles trend since you're so focused on it?
I don't know how fair that is. I mean, you know, I don't think Bowles is omnipresent on the offensive side of the ball. Like, he doesn't call plays, certainly. And I think he tends to give his coordinators leeway sometimes for consternation. Like, sometimes. I think he gives them free rein for the most part. I do. Even during the game, I don't think he was on the headphones with Canales. Like, I don't think he was. So,
is the guy ever responsible if he's not even on the headphones with the offensive
Well, he's on the headphones with Jackie Davidson. Like, don't forget about that one. So, I don't think it's fair to blame Bowles for a slow-starting offense, necessarily. You know, the offense certainly didn't start slow those first 2 years with Brady.
No, I think it boils down to Todd Bowles' philosophy, and we talked about it earlier in this podcast. Todd Bowles wants to run the ball. Well, running offenses generally aren't high-scoring offenses. So running offenses, by nature, you don't expect them to score a bunch in the first opening drive, or the opening drive. So naturally, there would be a slow-starting offense. I don't think that's a stretch to suggest that.
Well, I'm talking about the whole first quarter, too, Lee Bowles. The whole first quarter, the first half, even, isn't up to snuff. But Steve, to answer your question directly, I'm not pinning that one on Bowles. The final team record, I'm pinning that one on Bowles, whether good or bad. But not first quarter offense. I think he tends to give the coordinator a lot of leeway.
Right.
There's one way other than that. I don't have an answer for this. So it's mostly, you know, what's your take kind of question. The Bucs, I think last podcast we spoke about this. It just blew my mind that the Bucs were losing entering the fourth quarter last year. How many more wins would the Bucs have had they scored a couple of touchdowns on an open drive? Would that have been enough to win 11 games?
I think it's a fair question, Lee. It affects everything you do. The defense, comes out with more confidence because you're playing from ahead. And I think it just filters down to everything you do. When you get off to a good start, it's not inconsequential. It's just not, Steve. The good teams tend to start quickly, and the Bucs are near the bottom in that regard for two seasons, including one with Brady. It's got to change, Steve. It's got to change. They're not talented enough, you know, like the Chiefs are, like the Niners are, Steve. They're not talented to the extent where they can consistently overcome slow starts. It's a slog for them.
Sage, what's on the docket this weekend for you? You going hot dogs? You going vegan? What's going on?
Well, Sims Talk, which you guys say, what? Sims who? Charles Sims? No, not Charles Sims. Sims Park here in beautiful Newport Richey. They're having some events Saturday night. They got a band. They got live music. They got food. So I think we're going to go down there, maybe bump into some people that we know. And Lee, if it's a Van Halen tribute band, Lee, I'll be giving you a review by Saturday night.
Will you? I thought you'd run home if that was the case.
No, I'm not gonna run home.
isn't the city, the proud city of Newport Richey, your kingdom, isn't that, aren't they celebrating their centennial this weekend?
I believe that's correct, Lee, so they're even older than the Sage. Lee, even older than the Sage. And I don't know if you passed by on US 19, maybe you haven't gone down this far, but there's a big-ass sign, Lee, when you turn off 19 on Main Street. I mean, that thing is enormous. It says Main Street on it, but it's in big bold letters. You know, it's like a Hollywood sign. And I think they overdid it, Steve. I think they overdid it because, this is not Beverly Hills over here. This is Newport Richey.
What's the sign? Eat? It'd be surprisingly, we got a lot of new restaurants dotting the whole area. It's improving, from what I understand.
Well, before you know it, they'll be doing celebrity tours to your house. You'll get a kickback, $6 a tour, and a pint of Cosmo. So
hire a bunch of six-year-olds to be selling carbonate out on the sidewalks, Steve.
Are you able to bring Cosmo to this centennial celebration?
No, he'll rip people to shreds, Lee.
He's not good with people.
He's a joker, like
oh, okay.
Yeah.
I have jeans on.
Control your dog, Ira. We'll talk to you next week.